Good morning, Boker Tov.
Quite loud.
Nice to see everybody. Gemach Hatzima Tova to everybody. Hope that everybody had a good Yom Tov. Thank you very much. And should have a wonderful Shana Tova, Mutsukah, a year of success and health and only good things, Be'ezrat Hashem. We have a sponsorship for today's shir, which is sponsored in memory of Esther Bat Mea, Aleha Shalom. And it's her yard site, and the neshama should have an aliyah, please God, and we should learn Torah in her memory. And I think that the Torah we're going to learn will be something of a treat. I think I'm going to take you to some places that you haven't been before. At least that's my goal. And we're going to address the issue of segulas. Segulot. So we're all fresh out of Rosh Hashanah, eating our carrots and our fenugreek and little bits of rimon and apple and honey, etc. But we're not finished because there's more. This is a time in many ways of segulot, with Yom Kippur coming up. We'll talk in a minute about kaparas and Hoshana Rabbah, other things that you may or may not have come across. And therefore I want to explore with you today the issue of segulot. We live in a time where people are, I think, more into segulas than they used to be. You could have a whole analysis as to why that is. Sociologically, psychologically, are people disenfranchised with classic answers, with normal, natural medicine, whatever it is, or classic medicine? Are people want more alternative sources of success? You could talk about the fact that people are much more integrated now. People, societies which usually used to live apart 50, 60 years ago in different parts of the world are now all together. There's a kibbutz goliath, and therefore we see people a lot more from different cultures. But there have always been, both in Ashkenazi and in Sephardi culture, different approaches to this issue. Approaches which are more rational and approaches which are less rational, and we'll see them coming out today. The question of what the word segula means is an interesting one. The truth is, I should have really divided this into two shiurim. But we're not having a shiur next week because it's Yom Kippur, and we're not having a shiur in 2 weeks because it's Chol HaMoed. And I figured 3 weeks from now, no one's going to be interested in segulas anymore. You're all past that, we'll talk about something else. So I've pushed it in a little bit to one shiur, and we'll skip around the sources, but I brought you a more comprehensive source sheet. What does the word segula mean? The segula, am segula. The Jewish people are called an am segula. Someone quipped to me, we are an am segula, not an am segulot. But we'll see whether that's true or not by the end of this year. Segula means treasured, special. It has a connotation of hidden, something which is very precious, which you keep hidden, and therefore it takes on this meaning in terms of mystical or Kabbalistic hidden cures or hidden success, talismans. Or we will talk about exactly how that works, whether it's right or whether it's wrong. Exactly what the relation is between segula, the color segol, and the punctuation mark, the vowel, not punctuation mark, the vowel with the air, segol, is a good question. I'll leave you to think about that. The most convincing connection I saw was that the word segol is related linguistically to eshkol, which is a bunch of grapes, which is both something precious and something purple and something which even looks like a little bunch with the air under the word. Maybe that's right, maybe that's wrong. You can go away and do your research on that and come back. But in the meantime, we have a lot to say about segulot and what they mean and where they come from. I brought you here at the beginning a time of segulot. You know source number one. We've all just experienced that. These are all from classic sources, Shulchan Aruch. Says the Shulchan Aruch in number one, Dvarim shenoigim b'le'echol b'leil Rosh Hashanah. Yei adam ragil le'echol b'Rosh Hashanah rubya. Dehainu tiltan, you should eat different things. I'm not going to go to all the art. Karati, leeks, and silka, and beets, and tamari, and dates, and kra, and gud, etc. Because sheyoichol rubya yemen, when you say these things, you say, yehi ratzayin, sheyirbu tchuyoteinu, etc., etc., etc. And the Ramah adds, v'yei shenoigim le'echol tapuach, matok, apple, a sweet apple, which back in Ashkenazi lands was pretty much the only thing they did. I think, I don't know if people can remember back 50 years, did anyone do any of the other stuff? Yeah. Apple and honey, they did. The Sephardim, the carrots maybe, the Sephardim used to do a lot more. I spoke that in Poland, you couldn't get many of these foods, I suspect, in October. So, bitvash ve'omrim, titchadesh aleinu shana matuka v'chein no'agim, v'yesh ochlim rimonim, etc., etc. And then the Shulchan Aruch says in bed, ochlim rosh keves. Okay, keves, you eat the head of a sheep. I don't know if anyone here had the head of a sheep at their table. I find that Even the head of a fish is enough to turn some of our guests a bit green. But the head of a sheep, if you have that. Nia Lerosh Velod Zanav. I got a nice little simanim card from Nir Barkham, which he sent out to people, which I suspect was, with all the simanim on it, that he was saying Nia Lerosh Velod Mashu Acher. But we'll see whether that is true or not, but it was very handy. Zeicha Le'ila Le'ela Shol Yitzchak. V'yesh Medagdikin Shel Olechel Egozim, and people don't eat certain things, nuts, She'agos b'gematria ched, because nut is in gematria ched, which of course is not actually, but that's fine, that's the whole shir on gematrias, it's just one out, it's not far off, yes.
The word faith in Vinic Hebrew is
started without an aleph, okay, fine. So here you have the answer, is the gematria is ched, just without the aleph. V'holchin el anar, and we go to a river, loyma pasuk, and we say the pasuk, v'tashlich v'mazalot yam, kol chatusenu, all of these symbolic gestures we do on Rosh Hashanah. The Mishnah Berurah jumps in immediately and says, why? Why are we doing all this? So he says, first of all, v'hu adim mashinikra b'lashonis acherim loshen rubia yoichel kol medino medina, you should pick whatever in your language that you live has connotations of increase and positivity and good, yes, Herbert. We'll get there. The whole shir is about that. We'll get there. If at the end of the shir I haven't addressed that question, then ask me again. And the Mishnah Berurah says, whatever in your language sounds like a bracha, people have bananas, because in French it's bonane, or shein bane beis hamikdash, whatever. People have lettuce, raisins, and celery. For lettuce have a raisin salary. And the Mishnah Berurah says, you should do all of these things because they all give this same feel. And then he says, "V'hine kol elu ha'inyanim oisen hakol le'simon toif." Simon toif. It's a simon toif. We'll talk about mazel toif in a minute, but it's a simon toif. So too, when it comes to Yom Kippur, the Shulchan Aruch says, although he's slightly less happy about this, "Mashenogim number 3." Minag Berkip Kaporas Be'erev Yom Kippur. Masha Noigim Lasos Kapora Be'erev Yom Kippurim. People who do Kaporas on Erev Yom Kippur, Lishchot Tarnigol. And they shech the chicken, Al Kol Ben Zachar, on every male, and we'll see also females as well. The Loima Alat Psukim, and they say special Psukim, and some people wave it around their heads and do all sorts of things. Yesh Lim Noya HaMinag. He said, you should stop that Minag. Don't do it, says the Shulchan Aruch. The Machaber says, I don't like it, we should stop it. Jumps in the Ramah and says, "V'yesh mehagaynim shekasfu minag zeh." No, I'm sorry, there are gaynim. Some of the greatest of the greatest have written about this minag. V'chein kasfu oyster rabbi minag achroinim, and so many of the later authorities write this minag again. V'chein nogi v'chol medina zeilu ve'eilu shanis. And in Poland we do kaporas, and don't mess with our kaporas. We do it, don't change it. Kihum minag batikin. This is an ancient minag, and then he talks about exactly how you do it. You take for the girls, you take for the boys, female chickens, male chickens, etc. And then at the end, he says, "V'yesh lahak mishmita hakaporis miyadach preshech ziralav." You should also do the shchita just after you do all the ceremonies, the samach yadavalav, and rest your hands on the chicken. Dumutah korban, like a korban, as if it was a korban. And this is another reason why some people don't like Kaparas, because it looks as though you're making a korban without the Beis HaMikdash. V'zarkim b'nei me'ehem al ha'aginot o b'chaser. And then you should take the giblets of the chicken and throw them in the yard. I don't know if you do that. I must confess, I'm not a kaparas person with chickens or without chickens. But if you do kaparas, it says you throw the giblets in the yard. Mokum sheha'opas yochim l'kat. So where the birds can eat them. So there already we see this symbolic gesture this time of year, which some people are happier about and some people are less. So Machaber says, no, I don't think so. We'll see where he's coming from. The Ramah says, excuse me, Kaporos is a well-established minhag. If you go forward to Hoshana Rabbah, and this is where you might find it slightly new, on Hoshana Rabbah, the Ramah himself brings a minhag, which he says, no, this is maybe one too far. This goes too far, but I want to record it, he says. Number 4. This is in Hilchas Hoshana Rabbah. Kasdor Rishonim, in a Shulchan Aruch, the Rishonim have written, Sheyesh Siman Batseil Halavana. There is a sign in the light of the moon on Hoshana Rabbah, the waning moon. Okay, Gibeah's moon. Beleil Hoshana Rabbah. Mashayikrelo, what will happen to you, or the Kroivav, or to your relatives, Ba'os Hoshana. If you want to know what's in store in the next year, there's a minhag you do on Hoshana Rabbah. I'll tell you in a minute how to do it. And other people say, well, you shouldn't really get into this. Because it'll make your mazel. If you find out that bad things are going to happen, it will mess up your mazel for the year. We'll talk about it soon, where he's coming from. And also people won't get the right end of the stick. People will think it's something that it isn't, and we shouldn't do it. And we'll see where he gets that word from soon. Better to be tamim, to be pure, to be simple. And don't try and predict the future by the shade of the moon. What is it that people do in the shade of the moon? Look in the Elio Rabbah, number 5. But Abu Dharam, the Abu Dharam records this. The Abu Dharam's living in the 1300s in Spain. But Abu Dharam comes to the Yesh, Shikorchim B'Sadin. You wrap yourself up in a sheet, and go out into the moon. When you take off the sheet, and you stand naked in the light of the moon. Okay? Please, if you're going to try this one at home, just pick your spot, okay? I don't want any calls from the police that I've been inciting, you know, whatever. And you spread out your hands and you spread out your fingers. If you find that the shade is intact, tohu. That's good. But if the shade of your head is missing, then that's very bad. You're not going to make it. And if different of your fingers are missing, this one is the sister, this one is the brother, this one is the mother-in-law. You want to know what that one is, right? Okay? V'yad yamin simon levanav hazcharim, v'yad small simon le kevas. One hand is for the men, one hand is for the women, etc. And that's what he means. Sa'at tzilam yaleihem, which Yeshua says about the Kananim and the Meraglim. V'zeh tzel mayribu bo'a d'b'bo'a. It's interesting. It's not the actual shade, because everything has a shade. It's the secondary shade, and we'll see what that means soon. So there's a shade, there's a secondary shadow many times, and it's that you're looking for as to whether it's missing or not. Now, you hopefully get a feel for why this sounds a bit strange. Has anyone ever do this? Maybe not. Maybe a different question. Has anyone ever heard of this? Okay, now I'm not bringing you from a strange, weird, I'm bringing you straight out of the pages of the Shulchan Aruch. Okay? And therefore it's very interesting. Kaparis, everybody's heard of, whether they do it or not. Eating leeks, and everybody's very into that. But standing in the shade by the light of the silvery moon, that people don't do. The Aruch HaShulchan jumps in and says in number 6, Ube'emet chalil la'am b'nei Yisrael la'habit alim yan keila. God forbid we should do this. We do not do this. We don't touch this. If you want to change, have a good year, do tshuva. Then it's hapech mirala toif. Things will change from bad to good. Which links again with last week's share a bit. Who do we turn to when we daven? Who do we turn to when we do tshuva? It's directly to Hashem. Do not get involved in this kind of thing. Now, it's interesting that you have there a range of minhagim, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah, Rabbah, some of which are mainstream, some of which are unheard of, some of which are in the middle. Where do we stand on these things? How do we feel about these things? Are we happy with the ones that we do just because we're used to them, and therefore it feels normal, whereas the other stuff feels very weird? People who come to your Rosh Hashanah table who are not from perhaps a background where they do simanim also think this is very strange. What does this do if you eat these pomegranate seeds? How does this magically change? And of course, we can understand that in more depth, which we will. But we have to get a little bit of background as to what is the potential problem with a segula. Segula meaning a hidden, irrational, maybe irrational action, charm, something that you hope will have a positive effect. What are the problems? What are the upsides? What are the downsides? So let's start with the prohibitions in the Torah. Look at number 7, please. There are 3 prohibitions in the Pesukim in Vayikra. It says here in Yotzeh, Lo tochlu al adam, do not eat over blood. That's not the prohibition of eating blood. That's a kashrus issue. This is much more a necromancy or a witchcraft kind of issue. The Lo tanachashu ve lo ta'anein. Don't do nichush and don't do ma'oinein. These are 2 separate things. And the Gemara asks in Sanhedrin number 8, what are these things? What is it telling you not to do? So, number 8, Tana Rabbana, says the Gemara Sanhedrin, Ma'inen, what is Ma'inen? Rabbi Kiva Omer, Zeh Machashiv Itzin V'Shaz. You try and work out good luck in times, auspicious times, inauspicious times. The Omer person says, Hayom Yafalitzeh. Today is an auspicious day to go. L'machar Yafalitzeh, and tomorrow is a good day to buy things. It's a lucky day. Okay? Limude Arabic, Limude Arabic, Arabic Shvi'is, Chit Vin Yafois, okay, the Chit, if you learn, if you do certain things on the Arabic Shvi'is, then the wheat will be better. Ikure Kitnios, Miyos Raz, and all sorts of different things. If you pick this time, Friday the 13th is an unlucky day. That's an Issa Doraisa. To say this day is lucky, or that day is unlucky, says the Pasuk, you can't do that. There's no such things as lucky times or unlucky times. Ah, you're all about to ask me, but isn't Adar meant to be an auspicious month if you're in a conflict between a Jew and a non-Jew? Adar is a good month to engage in that, if it's ever good to engage in conflict. Sometimes you don't get a choice in the matter, you have a court case, and Av is a bad month. So where does that come from? And the answer is, well, one second, that comes straight out of the pages of Tanakh. Av is a negative month because we see all the things that happened in Av. And Adar is a positive month because we see. Therefore, that's coming out of Nevuah. That's not coming from nowhere. Here, these are all things which people just, Mishigasim, people have. They won't go on the 13th row in the plane. And by the way, if you people come to your Rosh Hashanah table and poo-poo your simanim, you ask them if they'll sit on row 13 on an aeroplane. Okay, and most people will say, actually, I'd rather not if that's okay with you. They don't even have a row 13 on an aeroplane for that reason. And they should. They don't have a what? No. Well, row 13, no junction 13, no floor 13 on the hotel, etc. Yes. Oh, so we'll get Kita. We'll get to that in a minute. As the weather, what the simon is. Yes. Okay, Halloween. Yes.
And it's done everywhere with like that.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Interesting. Yes.
And it's just things like we're talking about superstition.
We'll get there. Superstition is prohibited. It's clear in the Torah. You're not allowed to do that. What is Nichrush? Third line, number 8. Tan Rabbana Menachesh. Zeshe Omer, someone who says, Pitoy Nafla Mipiv. My bread dropped out of my mouth, what I was eating. Oy. That's a negative sign. Okay. Maklo Nafla Miyado. His stick fell out of his hand. That's a bad sign. Benoy Kurilome Achairav. His son calls from behind. Oyrev Kuriloi. A raven suddenly crows. And they think, no. Svi Hifsik Baderek. A deer crosses his path. We're now into the black cats more than deers. All of these things. Nachash Miyaminoi. Shuel Mismolo, there's a snake on one side, there's a fox on the other side. Don't start with me now, it's the wrong morning, Rosh Chodesh, it's the wrong day, etc. Moshe Shabbos, Tan Rabbanu, Loitanakshu, Loitanayin. You can't do any of these things. Why not? What's the problem with doing all of these things? All of these irrational, knock on wood, and leaving aside whether these things have actual real Avodah Zorah origins, which would knock on wood and things like that may in fact have, but you're not allowed to be superstitious. And the Torah says explicitly why. Number 9. Ki ata ba el ha'aretz, you're going to a land, says God to the Jewish people, asher asher elokecha noten lach, which God is giving you, lo til mad la'asayt ketu avot ha'goyim ha'ein. Don't learn all the disgusting practices. And to'eva is a strong word. People often wheel out the word to'eva for certain other discussions. Here it's talking about superstition. Don't pass your children through the fire, which is a Molech, idolatrous practice. Or magicians. Ma'ainen, here you see also it mentions Ma'ainen, someone who has auspicious times. Or Menachesh, or someone who is superstitious. Or Mechashesh, or witchcraft. All of these things are wrong. We had a shir about that 2 weeks ago, remember? Dorish alameitim, don't get involved with the dead, cults of the dead, and necromancy, etc. Ki toivat Hashem kol oise eile. This is disgusting to God. Ubiglal ha-toivat ha-eile, because of these disgusting things, Hashem lokecha, moirish otan mifanecha. That's why they're being thrown out. You can't do that. Tamim tiyem Hashem lokecha. You have to be tamim. Tamim hi, meaning, we'll see Rashi in a minute, shalem, pure in a sense. When the non-Jewish nations that you're going to replace, when they want to know the future, they turn to all of these superstitious practices. Okay? God doesn't let you do that. Who should you go to? Go to the Nevi'im. Go to the leaders. Go to the Gedolei Yisrael who have Nevuah. And the question is, who has Nevuah? Who doesn't have Nevuah? Do we believe in Dav Torah? That's a whole different shir. But there are people who have a kayak, a spiritual power that will guide you, not magicians and not soothsayers and divination, etc., necromancy and Ouija boards and all of that stuff. You go to the Nevi'im instead. That's one of the reasons why anything we find in our Psukim, by definition, is not superstition. So it's Av and Adar are there, so that's coming from a kosher source, if you like. And Rashi says, number 10, Tamim Tia Meshav Elokecha, Rashi says, Hitalechi mo b'tzmimut, go simply with Hashem, Tetzapelo, look to God. Lo'tach korach hafidah, don't try and predict the future. Elokol mashi yavo alecha, kabel b'tzmimut, whatever happens, gamzu l'tayva, accept, va'az tiyemo, and then you'll be with Hashem, u'b'chelko, and his portion. And therefore, clearly the Torah says that anything superstitious is wrong, we should be turning to Nevuah, to learning, to Torah, etc. Why? What is wrong with superstition? And here you find a fundamental disagreement, which is going to take us through the whole shir, which is between the more Kabbalistic, mystical sources and the more rational, philosophical sources. The Ramban, I brought you three sources from the Ramban, I'm not reading all of them, but the Ramban, Nachmanides, and many, many with them, maybe you'd even say most, approaches say very clearly the following. Why can't we get into these things? Because they're dangerous. Because they're real. Because Avodah Zorah and necromancy and all of these superstitions, some of them have real power. And we mustn't mess with the Kochot HaTumah. There are negative forces and positive forces. We have to be focused on the positive, not the negative. Look at number 11. The Ramban on Chumash says, V'ata Dava Havein Din Yani Hakshafim. Understand well what witchcraft is. When God created everything, mi'ayin, from nothing. He created the upper powers to look after and to rule and to drive the lower ones. Everything lower than them. Like we said last time, there are malachim, there are levels of malachim. He gave power over the world to the stars, ubamazalot, and to the constellations. As they rule them and they move around them, etc. As we know, has been proved from astrology. Astrology, says the Ramban, star signs, Gemini's rising, Jupiter's sinking, etc. These are all real things. We know that from the star signs. They have power. And he gave over the stars and constellations malachim. Okay? V'sarim shehem nefesh lahem, which if you like are the neshamas of those constellations, and they are even above them. V'hinei hanhagasa me'et heyotem ad la'olam, and there forever they will have that power. V'adizeres elyonim asher sha atam lahem. They have real power, and so too the Ramban in number 12 says, therefore even though you're not allowed to seek advice from an astrologer, you're not allowed to go there and ask them because of tamim tiyeh im Hashem alakecha, if you nevertheless hear that something is negative in your star sign, something happens, someone gives you a prediction based on one of these dark forces, these koichos atzuma, you have to take it very seriously. Look into the third line of number 12. Aval im nishma dava mehem, if you hear anything from these forces, nema hakol bidei shamayim, you have to say, no, everything's in the hands of heaven, ki hu elokei elokei elohim, he is the God of gods, el yonka al hakol, hayocha b'chol, mashanim ha'arkas hakovim, God can change it, etc. Maybe you can do tshuva, maybe you can daven, maybe you can change your mazel, but it's real. You don't mess with it because it's real. And so too he says in the tshuvas as well, astrology is a real thing, we don't seek it, we don't ask their advice, but when we hear about it, if you hear some astrological prediction that don't go to Beit Makan on Thursday because it's going to be very bad, the truth is astrology very rarely says anything helpful or useful that you could actually act on. I'm not talking about the stuff that you read in the newspaper. That's almost everyone agrees is nonsense. You know, you're going to have a difficult decision to make this week. You're going to have a difficult decision to make. Every half hour I have a difficult decision to make. So, if you had a real astrologer who's been a proven track record, says the Ramban, if you hear not to go to Beit Makan on Thursday, don't go. You can't rely on a miracle. Who knows if you've got the schutz, if you've got the personal merit to overcome the astrological prediction. That's one approach. One second, let's go on to the Rambam. The Rambam takes exactly the opposite approach. Maimonides, and he says the following. First of all, he talks to number 14, what is Ma'aynen, what is Machashev, etc. And then he says in, pick it up in Ted Zion, on the fourth line, number 14. Udvarim ha'elu, all of these things, kulam divrei sheker, It's all nonsense, he says. It's all lies. It's all designed to trick you in. And the ancient pagan rituals made up all these things, for the simple-minded people of the time, so that they'd follow them. People love the superstition, people get worried by it, so they played on that fear. It's not right for Jewish people who are meant to be chachamim, we're meant to be the winners of the Nobel Prizes in the world. Not believers in nonsense superstition. It's not appropriate for us to be drawn after this. Don't even think for a second, sheyesh to'elet bahem. Meaning, why are those things, why are these things prohibited in Torah? Not because they're dangerous, but because they're stupid. And the Torah is saying, to even believe that give any credence to these at all, undermines your status as an Am Segula, a special people. Why are you special? You're special because everyone else believes in this nonsense and you don't. And if you do believe in these things, but you think in your mind that they're true, and they're wise, but the Torah said not to do them because they're dangerous, like the Ramban said, you're a fool, and you're mentally held back. Yeah, okay, I left out a few words. I don't want to get into whole discussions about who is and who isn't. Aval balei chokhma, for people who are wise, utzimimei hadas. Look at how he uses this word tamim. For the Rambam, tamim tia is tzimimei hadas. Clarity, clear-minded. It's not just about trusting Hashem. It's about having your head screwed on the right way. Yedu b'rayas brewers, they know where very clearly shekol elu advarim she'asra Torah, all these things the Torah prohibited, enum divri chokhma, ela tohu v'hevel. He couldn't be clearer. It's absolute nonsense. We don't believe in it at all. And therefore the Rambam says, therefore, if you hear that Madame Zelda, or whoever it is that's an astrologer with a track record, has told you not to go to Beit Vegan, if you change your plans and don't go to Beit Vegan, that is a Torah prohibition. So you're a bit stuck, because you have to know which way you're going to pass again. Because if you hear on the grapevine that you can't go to Beit Vegan, so the Rambam will tell you, you know something? Don't go. Who you think you're a big tzaddik, you can overcome the prediction. The Rambam will say, you've got to go. If you don't go, then you're doing an Issa Doraisa. So you better work out who you're asking your shilas to. We'll see the Shulchan Aruch soon. The Rambam even says, even if you technically don't do the prohibition and act on the prediction, but you just consult somebody, look at in number 15 just for a second, however Allah Zebiyaseh Me'achad, if you do any of these activities, Hapulot Chayv Malchus, that's a Torah prohibition. Kolomah Misha Yiyah Kosev V'Yagid L'Bnei Adam B'Poyel She'yif Alatot, so someone who acts on something or is given information to act on it. The Loi Misha Yishala Kosev, if you just go and ask a prediction, that's not technically the prohibition. Aval Hasheila L'Kosem, but just even to ask, Megunem Od, is really, it's base, vulgar. It's not appropriate. So whatever that means, Mugunema Od, the Rambam's not happy about that for sure either. So even if technically you're not doing the prohibition itself, just to give any credence to it is something which the Rambam holds to be definitely prohibited, or at least the wrong thing to do. And I'm going to leave you to read number 16 on your own in detail. The Rambam wrote a long letter to the Chachmei Marseille, to the rabbis of Marseille, on astrology, where he clearly rubbishes the whole thing. He says it's completely wrong. It's you're not allowed to believe in it. Maybe we will read a few words, because it's very interesting. It says number 16, know my master, says the Rambam, Maimonides, that it's not proper for man to accept as trustworthy anything other than one of these three things. How would you know what to believe in life? And this is actually quite helpful, because a lot of people walk around us not really knowing what they believe. You look something up on the internet, says you don't eat this or you do eat that. Do you believe it or you don't believe it? So the Rambam telling you, these are three things to believe. The first is a thing in which there's clear proof derived from man's reasoning, arithmetic, geometry, astronomy, logic. Something is logic, 2 plus 2 equals 4. You know that, I don't need to prove it to you, it's a logical progression. The second is a thing that man perceives through one of the five senses, such as where he knows with certainty this is red, this is black. So something you see with your own eyes. The Rambam doesn't believe that we're living in a matrix, or we're a brain in a box being manipulated by an evil demon or scientist. He's not a Cartesian. He says, no, if I, this is real, to give it a bang, I know it's real. The third is a thing that the man receives from the prophets or from the righteous, meaning you can't know everything, you can't test everything, you have to rely on some people. Yes! You have to rely on people who are reliable. Every reasonable man ought to distinguish in his mind and thought all the things that he accepts as trustworthy and says, this I accept as trustworthy because of tradition, the people I rely on that are reliable and said this, this because of sense perception, this on grounds of reason, etc. Anything else he says, ignore. Now, what about astrology? So the Rambam makes a point here which we had a shiur on astrology some time ago, which I fleshed this out more. But the Rambam's concerned that there seem to be things in the Gemara that look a lot more superstitious than he would want you to be. And believe in things, for example, Rabbi Akiva's daughter was given a prediction by astrologers that she would die on her wedding day. Say the story in the Gemara. And Rabbi Akiva was very worried about this. And in the end, she didn't die because she did a mitzvah, she gave food to an ani, and etc., she was saved. So the Rambam has a little bit of a problem now, as the Rambam often has, which is, yes, I've got this very hard-line philosophical approach against astrology, what about all the sources that you can find in Chazal about this, that, and the other that seem to go against what he says? So he does look at the last paragraph. I know, he says, that you may search and find sayings of some individual sages in the Talmud and Midrashim, whose words appear to maintain that at the moment of a man's birth, the stars will cause such and such to happen to him. Do not regard this as a difficulty. He says, but it's not fitting for man to abandon the prevailing law, the halacha, and raise once again counter-arguments and replies. Similarly, it is not proper to abandon matters of reason that have already been verified by proofs, shake loose of them, and depend on words of a single one of the sages from whom possibly the matter was hidden. Now the Rambam starts walking on slightly thin ice. He says, why do sometimes you see things in the Gemara that seem quite superstitious? He says, well, maybe the rabbi that said this was a das yochid, he was a single view we don't follow, maybe he was wrong. He didn't understand this properly. Or maybe there was an illusion in those words. Maybe he wasn't being literal. Or they may have been said with a view to the times or the business before him. The rabbis were speaking in a context to people. They weren't speaking to you. They were speaking to the people at the time. You surely know that how many of the verses of the Holy Law are not to be taken literally. Since it's known through proofs of reason that it's impossible for a thing to be literally so, the translator of the Aramaic Targum, he talks about that as well, a man should never cast his reason behind him, for his eyes are set in the front and not in the back. Okay? So the Rambam is aware that there are sources in the Gemara that don't seem to back up this very hard-line, anti-superstitious approach, but he says, you know something, I can navigate through them. We'll see how he does that in a minute. Either it was a single opinion we don't follow, or it was, don't take it out of context, etc. And there are, and the Rambam clearly rails against people who are superstitious, even more so people who bring superstition into mitzvahs, which for him is even worse. Look in number 17. Minag pashut shekotvim al mezuzah shebechutz kineged harevach shebein parasha lepasha shakai. It's well known that we write shin dalad yud on the outside of the mezuzah. That's not a problem. It's the name of Hashem. The ein b'zeh hefsed, that's not a problem. The fisher hu bechutz, that's on the outside of the klaf. Aval elu shekotvim mebifnim. But there are people that write into the mezuzah text itself. Shemot HaMalachim, the names of angels, or Shemot Kedoshim, or holy names, or Pasuk, or Chotmot, or different kind of superstitious things, even coming from the Torah. Hari Heim Bichlal Misha Ein Lehem Chelik LeOlam Haba. These people have not only done an Avera, they've lost their entire place in the world to come. She'elu HaTipshim, because these fools, Loi Dai Lehem Shebitlu HaMitzvah. It's not good enough that they've ruined the mezuzah. They've passed up the mezuzah. Elishasu mitzvah gedoyla shehi yichud Hashem, but they've taken a great mitzvah which is uniting Hashem's name, Hashem Echad, in the mezuzah, shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, va'avatei va'avodasei, and all the wonderful things it says in the mezuzah, ke'ilu hu kamaya, and they've made it into an amulet, shel hanayet asmon, for their own protection. Oh, I'll write this, it'll protect my house. So how dare you do that? That this mezuzah is just, I had a very interesting conversation once with a, when I was in university, we had non-Jewish women who used to come and clean the student rooms. So at the end of the year, one lady came up to me and said, I've been having a bet with my cleaners what that thing is on your door, that you've pinned onto your door, and I want to know if I've won the bet. So I said to her, what did you think it was? She said, I thought it was an air freshener. Thank you. So I said, okay, I mean, you know, not really, but she looks a bit crestfallen. But that's what the Rambam saying. If you think it's a spiritual air freshener, then you've ruined the whole mitzvah, and you've undermined everything. You've turned mitzvahs into superstitious nonsense. Yes. Well, that's a good question. Why? It could be because they say, oh, I'm missing the zchut of the mitzvah, of the mezuzah, and I want to do mitzvahs with more care and attention, and therefore it's a good thing to check that, and therefore I want to do a mitzvah. Maybe the merit of the mitzvah will be something that helps me. I would have thought that was a perfectly legitimate thing to say. Or maybe they'll say, oi, the mezuzah was giving out an aura, and the mezuzah's broken, I have to fix the aura, and then the bad luck will go away, and that's just poshut of a zorah, and it's not exact. Where you are on that, and other things in between. So it depends on your motivation, as to how you, there's nothing wrong with checking your mezuzahs. I'm very, and many people do not check their mezuzahs regularly enough, and that's the thing to think about. Anyway, we will go on. There are many things which even the Rambam has to accept are legitimate. For example, Psoik Psukecha, and we'll get in a minute to the Goral Hagra. Psoik Psukecha, what is that? There was a well-standing custom, a well-established custom in the Gemara many times, we'll see an example here, that people would go up to a child, a young child, randomly in Cheder, and would say, which Pasuk are you learning now? And depending on the Pasuk the child said, they would, oh, that's a simon of some kind. Have a look at an example. This is Rabbi Meir and Acher, Elisha ben Avuya. Elisha ben Avuya has gone off the derech, the famous case where they're riding on Shabbos together, and Elisha ben Avuya is on the horse, because he doesn't keep Shabbos anymore, and Rabbi Meir is walking next to him, and Elisha ben Avuya says to him, you have to stop here because this is the tchum. I don't keep Shabbos, I don't care, but you keep Shabbos, you have to go home. And Rabbi Meir says to him, Rabbi, because he wouldn't leave him, why didn't you learn, okay? Why didn't you come back, brother? Amalei, he said to him, Atachazorbach, you're telling me to go back? You do tshuva as well. It's time for tshuva. Nobody's lost. Amalei, he said to him, like Kvaramati Lacha, I've already said to you, Kvarashamati Me'achore HaPargum, I've heard, said Elisha ben Avuya, from behind the curtain, we talked about that last week, Shuvu ban and Shoivavim, everyone should do tshuva, Chutz Me'achar. Not me. I can't come back. Takfei. So Rabbi Meir grabbed him. Okay? So I did a Beit Midrash. And they went to the Beit Medrash. And Amalei Yinuki, they said to a child, tell me what you're learning. Amalei, and he said to him, Ein Shalom Ama Hashem L'Rishayim. There's no peace for the wicked. Okay? Oi, that doesn't sound good. I did a Beit Knishka Achiti. They went to a second Beit Medrash. Amalei Yinuki, they said to a kid, tell me what you're learning. Amalei ki im tchabti benetar, even if you wash yourself in lime, v'tarbi lechaboris, v'nichtav avonech lefanah, your stain is always before me. Also, not good pasuk. Aile lebe knishka achriti, they went to another base of Knesset, and they said, tpsoik li psukecha. Amalei said to him, v'ad shedud, matati, kiltib shishani, you can dress up all you like, te adi az, adi zahav, ki tikri bapuch, you can put enach, you can put on your makeup, leshav tityapi, you're trying to look good, it's not gonna help. You still look terrible. You never can look better. The Aile lebe knishka achriti, they went to another one, and did the Aile le tleis lebe knishka, so they've been to 13, Cheders, Kulu Paskuleki Haidama. They all gave the same type of pasuk.
13,
interesting. Lucky number for the Jews. Okay? Every pasuk was the same that Elisha ben Avuya cannot do tshuva. Oh, that's it. So, and there are many occasions. There's a famous medrash, if you remember, with Mordechai and Haman, where Mordechai is trying to work out whether he's going to beat Haman, and he goes and asks kids in the streets of the Medrash, what's the pasuk you learned? This seems to be a legitimate thing to do. So what does the Rambam say about this? It doesn't sound like the Rambam is going to be so into asking kids. So look at number 19. Misha Amar, someone who says, Dira Zeh Shebaniti, Simon Toif. Someone says, this house is a Simon Toif Haitali Alai. It's been a good sign for me. Isha Zoshen is Saiti, this wife that I married, these animals that I bought, muvurechet haita, they've had such brocha, me'eit shekanite ishati. From the minute I bought them, life just got better and better. My new house, my new wife, my new farm, everything is just better. It's been a good simon to me. So the Rambam, that's okay, you can say that. V'chein ha'shoy l'tinok. Even if you want to ask a kid, eize posik ata lomed, what are you learning now? Im amalot posik min ha'mebrachas, and if he says a night posik, yismach, he can be happy, v'yom, and he says, oh, zeh siman toiv. That's a siman toiv. Kol elu ki yotze behu muta. This is all okay. Why? Hail the loy kiven masa, because you're not going to change your behavior based on it. But loy nimle mele asait, you're not stopping acting in certain ways. Ela asa zeh simala asmoy ledava shekfar haya. But you just use this as a way of reinforcing, I was a bit worried, you know, is this really a good vibe that I bought this house? And the kid gives a bracha and goes, oh, Baruch Hashem, siman toiv. Makes you feel happier. But if you start hearing psukim and think, oh, maybe I should sell the house, taka, based on that. That's not allowed. Says the Rambam, you cannot prospectively, proactively change the way you behave, because this is exactly what nichosh is for the Rambam. As we saw in the psukim, taking random things and changing your behavior. You're trying to decide whether to invest in Facebook or to invest in Amazon. And it could go either way. So you're sitting in a cafe and you say to yourself, if the next waiter brings a cappuccino, then I'll invest in Amazon. But if he brings an espresso, then I'll invest in Facebook. You can't make decisions based on that. It's nichosh, isn't it? It's a doraisa.
I have a suggestion. If you have a bubbling drink by Soda Stream, you can...
Really? Your investment advice you can get over here later on, okay? Fine. So the Rambam says no, only because it's retroactive. The Ravid jumps in, and the Ravid's from the more Kabbalistic approach, from a more mystical approach. He jumps in and he says no. It's interesting that the Ramban received his Masorah in Kabbalah. This is all pre the revelation of the Zohar. The Ramban received his Masorah in Kabbalah from Rabbi Yitzchak Sagi Nahor, who was the son of the Ravid. So the Ravid, even though he was Ashkenazi, someone was part of this whole mystical, there were many mystical Ashkenazim, Yudah Chos, etc. He says, no way, that's not true. You can even base actions on it. You can use it as a simon. It's not wrong to use it as a simon. He even is happy for you to go proactively. Similarly, have a look in number 20. Says the Rambam, Eimanachshim ka'alkim shenem aloy tenachshu, don't do nichush, as we saw what that was, like the non-Jews do. And he says, what is nichush? And he says, like I just said, people who make random simanim, look in the second line, kei v'chein ha'mesim simanim la'atzmai. You make signs for yourself, like the cappuccino or the espresso. Im yer ali kach v'kach, if such and such happens, eseh davar ploni, then I'll do this. V'im lo yer ali, lo yeseh, ke'eliezer eved Abraham. And who is the best example of someone who did prohibited nichush? Eliezer. Eliezer, who said, if a girl comes and she says, I'll do this and I'll do that, is that a problem with Eliezer? No, he was not Jewish. No surprises that he did nichush. Okay? So he did. He's a perfect example of what the Canaan do. Nothing could be clearer. And therefore the Rambam says, he's a perfect example of what you can't do. Hakol Asur. V'chol ha'oisim masim mipnei davar midvarim elu lokeh. It's a doraisa. And all the Ravid has to say to this is, Amar Avram, zeh shibush godol. This is a total error. This is completely wrong. There was nothing wrong with what Eliezer ben Avram did, and he goes on to talk about that. This is not called nichush. Nichush is completely different. And therefore, you see again being played out here, this tension where the Rambam can't ignore psoichli pesukeh. He can't ignore that that's a real thing because the Gemara talks about it, but he limits it. He says it's prospective. It's retrospective. It's when you do something and you're not going to change your actions based on it. And the Ravid says, no, that's not true. And I brought you in 21, the Beis Yosef, who tries to justify the Rambam, but with great difficulty. And he says, at the end of the day, there are others that disagree with him. And he says, the smag, look at the last, what I've underlined the last couple of lines, of Allah smag, kasav, matzinu, kama gedolim sha'amru, liyunuka posik, lipsuk, okay? Many gedolim have said that you can indeed say to a child, tell me a posik. The oisin masa al pi ha posik. And then you can act according to that, which the Rambam says you can't. Okay? The choshvim ze ke'ein nevua. And that's an interesting thing, because why may it be legitimate for you to say, this child will tell me a posik and I can act on that? Because that's not coming from the kochot hatumah. It's not coming from the negative forces. It's coming from the Tanakh. A And that's a kind of mini nevuah, and that is carried actually into the halacha. If you look in Shulchan Aruch, you want to know what to actually do. In Lemaisa says number 22, Ein sholim b'chayzim b'kachavim. You don't ask astrologers like horologists. You don't take lotteries to try and decide because of tamim tiyeh. But then he says in Dalet here on the third line, bayit tinok v'isha, like we saw in the Gemara, the house, a new house, a new wife, or to ask a child. Afal pi she'ein nichush, it's not nichush, yesh siman, but it's a siman. Says the Ramah, v'chein mutter lemon a tinok, you can say to a tinok, give me your posik. Can you act on it? Yesh omrim de'adam mutter la'atoyz lo siman b'davah shi'yavu la'atid, k'mo she'afa Eliezer Avram, b'davad Avram. Some say you can act on it, but yesh oishrim, and some says you can't. The Ramah hedges is better. Again, you better decide who is your rabbi. Because you can go to the kids and ask them what possibly they're learning, but then you have to work out, what can I do about that? Says the Ramah, well, some people say you can change your plans, some people say you can't. Someone who is straightforward and has bitachon ba'Hashem, chesed yusov avenu, that's a good thing to be. Now, in addition to asking a kid a posik, the Gemara gives a couple of other examples. Look at 24. Rav Vadik b'mabra. Rav would test whether he should do X or Y based on the river crossing, the river boat. What does that mean, Rashi says? Im mezumenet lo azil. He'd say, I don't know whether to go. Should I go to this place? Should I not go to this place? You know what? I go to the bus stop. Let's see if a bus comes. If a bus comes, let's show mine that I should go. The im bekaishi moitza, but if the bus never comes, lo yazil. He take it as a simmer. So you want to say that's what he did? Shmuel badik besifra. Shmuel would look in a book to see what's going on. But Rabbi Yochanan Badik B'Yunuka would ask a kid the pasuk. What is looking in a book? So one of the contemporary applications of this is what's called the Goral Hagra. What is the Goral Hagra? So I brought you, there are a few very famous cases of the Goral Hagra. It's discussed already over the last 400 or 500 years. One of the most famous I quoted from a tzaddik in our time, Rabbi Aryeh Levin, when he was trying to identify the bodies of the Lamed Hei, 12 of the 35, once they got the bodies back 3 years later, in 1951, 12 of the Lamed Hei were unidentifiable. They were also, they'd been mutilated when they were first killed. But he was unable to identify them. So there's a famous story, and I brought you the account of this, which is substantiated by different people who were there, that Rabbi Aryeh Levin took a special kind of chumash, and he turned 7 pages this way, 7 psukim, 7 columns, 7 verses, etc. You could read it for yourself. And he was able to find psukim that connected with the names of the bodies who needed to be identified. That is an extension, if you like, of psukli psukecha. However, can anyone try this at home? No, you have to be Rabbi Aryeh Levin. A few other people are reported to have done it. The Chofetz Chaim was trying to work out, should he go on a fundraising trip deep into Russia? He apparently did the Goral Hagra, and he came up with the answer, and Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, to Yaakov Avinu, I will go down with you to Egypt, and I'll bring you back again. Oh! He says, that's good, I'll do that. A famous reported case of the Goral Hagra is where Rav Aaron Kotler was trying to decide, is he going to go to America, or is he going to go to Israel? And he couldn't make a decision, and Rav Moshe Feinstein had sent him a visa from America to come to America, so apparently he did the Goral Hagra, and he came doing that. He came to the Pasuk where Hashem says to Aaron, "Go meet Lech Likrat Moshe Midbara. Go meet Moshe in the desert." So, it's a siman. Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe Rav Moshe Feinstein in the desert, America. They all saw parallel, so he decided to go to America. There's a story that the Bristol Rav was extremely unhappy to do the Goral Hagra. Even though there's a Masora from the Briskers from Chaim Volozhiner, he was very there's actually no clear evidence it connects with the Gro himself, which is an interesting point, which is not for now. But apparently they pressed him and pressed him. He was trying to make a decision to do the Goral Hagra. Very reluctantly, the story goes, he did the Goral Hagra, and he came up on the Posik, Tamim Tiyeh Hashem Elokecha, which is don't be superstitious, which he said, that's all I needed to hear. Finished. That's enough of the Goral Hagra. We're not doing that again. The question is whether there are any other ways of doing this. There are some people in the Hasidic world. The Goral Hagra is not so practiced. There are some Hasiduyot that are into putting a little petek in the letters, the igros of the Rebbe, etc., Rav Herschel Schechter, who I think I'm on firm ground because he's the official posting for the OU, is totally scathing of such a practice. He said it's totally nichush doraisa to stick something into Torah Shabbat. We only do this with Torah Shabbat stuff. And only if you know what you're doing and you're someone like Rav Aryeh Levin, but to stick letters into a Torah, even a Gemara or a Mishnah, certainly into the letters of a Rebbe, and try and work out what the Rebbe is telling you, says that's nichush doraisa. He tells the story of Shechter in one of his shiurim, that he met a woman in America who said to him that she was trying to make a decision. She was going to go to keep a summer camp or she was going to stay home. She couldn't make the decision. Normally she'd stick a petek in the letters of a certain Rebbe, and she didn't have the letters. So she said, you know something? I haven't got the letters. I'll use a cookbook instead. So she got a cookbook, and she stuck a little petek in. The next day she looked at it, and it opened up a blueberry pie. And she said, oh, I only make blueberry pie when we stay home. That's the seven that I have to stay home. So said Rav Hershatta, that's nichush doraisa, that's an issa doraisa, and it would have been no different if you'd have put the letters in the Rebbe, in the petek in the letters either. That would have also. Okay, I don't want to upset any chassidim, but you can go speak to Rav Herschel Schechter if you have a problem with that. So in terms of, there are real things that appear in the Gemara, Psochi, Pesukeich, etc., and maybe the Goral Hagro as well, which go in this direction. But let's get to Herbert's question, which is, so what exactly is a siman? What's going on with a siman and a segula? And let's spend the last 10 minutes looking at that question. The Gemara gives a list of simanim. It's in 26. Says the Gemara, Ein moshkin et hamalachim ela al hamayat. You only anoint a king at a well, at a spring. Kedei shetimashech malchutam, so that their kingship, their reign will go forth like the spring, and he brings a posik from Shlomo HaMelech, etc. Rabbi Abi, the second line. Haiman the boy later, if you want to know, imasik shatya ilo, if you're going to survive the year or not, what should you do? Niklishraga, take a candle, basari yumundi bein Rosh Hashanah liyom kippurim, and you see a little bit of a remez here, a hint to what we saw with the Hoshana Rabba. You take a candle between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, the beit deloy nashim zika, in a house where there's no draft, okay? If the flame is strong, you'll know that you've got a good year ahead, says the Gemara. Someone who wants to enter into a business enterprise. And they want to know, will it be successful or not? What should you do? Take a chicken. You see, these things are tropes that go through these ideas. Take a chicken. Raise a chicken. If the chicken's fat and healthy, maflach, then you'll know your business is going to be fat and healthy as well. And Haiman de boiler made people, or someone's going on a journey. Or boiler made, and they want to know, ichaza vaasil abeite, or like, are you going to make it back home again, or you're not going to make it back home again? So what should you do? Nekim abeite dechav. You go to a dark house. Ichazi bevor deboi. If you can see your shadow, lay the dehad of vaasil abeite. You'll know you'll make it home. Again, you see here the origins of the minhag that we talked about before. And then the Gemara says, v'lav milsahi, and none of this is right. Meaning people did this, but don't do it. Because these things don't work. But then the Gemara says, but why not? Dil machal shadaiti, because it might upset you, but you'll find out something that you don't like. Umitra mazle, and then you'll have a bad mazel. Because your psychological approach could actually change your mazel. So Amar Abaya, says, Hashtada Amrat Simana Milsahi. Now you've told me that these things don't work, but there are things that do work. Simana Milsa, what should you do? La'olam heiragil emetzib Rosh Hashanah, that you should, Rosh Hashanah, you should go and you should buy, and you should look at kra, the rubia, the karti, the silker, and beets, and goods. And this is where we see it. Now, that's a very strange Gemara. The Gemara listed a whole bunch of things that, you know, if you want your business to succeed, this to succeed, and then it said, don't do any of that. That's all, that, don't do that. But do this, because this does work. If you want to know, have a good year, then you'll eat this on Rosh Hashanah, that on Rosh Hashanah, this on Rosh Hashanah. So, what's going on with these simanim? So again, you have two approaches. The Meiri, in number 27 and 28, I brought you, I'm not going to read them all through, says, no, nothing magic is happening with these simanim. What's happening is the Yehi Ratzons. It's meant to be your mental state. And he says, actually, originally, they didn't have the Yehi Ratzons. You just were meant to have these on the table to look at them, to think of what that represented and help you do tshuva. But then the rabbis were worried, he said, in the Middle Ages, that you'd start to think that they were magic divination of some kind, that the pomegranate seeds do something. So they instituted the Yehi Rotzons. Because all the Gemara says is, have these things on your Rosh Hashanah table and look at them, and it'll help you to do tshuva. It says, no, now we say the Yehi Rotzons because we worry that people are going to think that there's something magic in the Siman in themselves. Therefore, the Meiri, very clearly in the line of the Rambam, says, no, there's no magic in the Simanim. The whole point is that they help you. They're just a spur. They're a focus to help you to do tshuva, but there's nothing magic going on. And the Marashah over on page 7 says that the reason that we do them is because all you're going to get from them is positive, like we said before. You're not going to try and learn anything negative. You're only going to learn positive, and therefore, like the Rambam said, they can hopefully give you a good feeling, help you do tshuva, etc. However, it must be said that the Chai Adam brings a much more mystical understanding, and he invokes the Ramban on Maase Avot Siman Labanim, and the Chai Adam says, no, actually these things can lay down real spiritual roots themselves. Just the act of eating these things, like the example I heard once from Rabbi Taft, I think, is just like with an embryo forming at very early stages inside the womb, very tiny changes, very small variations can have massive impact down the line. So too, even the slightest thing that you do on Rosh Hashanah can make a difference to the year. It can change the spiritual cosmic reality, etc. And therefore, again, you have these two approaches. What does the Simanim do? One approach is they don't do anything. You do everything. They help you focus, say Yehi Rotzon, etc. And others say, no, you know something? Maybe, like the Ramban says, sometimes the Nevi'im, rather than just give a Nevuah, they would do a Maisa. They would do an act. Yeah, Yirmiyahu tells Baruch to write something down and throw it into the Euphrates and let it sink like a stone, which will be a simon that the kingdom of Babel will sink like a stone. Okay? Sometimes they've got a stick, or a stick that said Yehuda, a stick that said Yosef, put them together. You know what I'm talking about. Says the Ramban, when you put a mitre together with the Nevuah, it makes the Nevuah unbreakable. So too, maybe the Simon together with Rosh Hashanah, etc. There's the last thing before we finish. I just want to make you aware that there are significant downsides. There's a whole list of things that the Gemara calls Darchei Emori, which is another kind of outgrowth. It really should be a separate shir, but there's a list in the Tosefta in Shabbos of all sorts of things which are listed as superstitious practices which you may not do as a kind of Avodah Zarah. One, by the way, is wearing a red band, wearing a red thread. The Tosefta explicitly says is Darchei Emori, is superstitious nonsense, and you may not do it. Now, what do we do with all of this? So, one opinion, the Uraim says, okay, this is the list, that's all there is. Anything else is not Darchei Emori. But no, that's not the case necessarily. I want you to look at number 36. I just want to pick up a couple of last things. Abaye Barava de Amitravayu. Abaye Barava said the following. Kal Dava Sheyesh Mishum, Yesh Bo Mishum Refuah. And here the doctors in the shir will perk up and listen, if they weren't before, which I'm sure they were. Anything which is Refuah, Ein Bo Mishum Darchei Emori. There's no problem of Darchei Emori. There's no problem of idolatrous superstition. If it's for healing. What does that mean if it's for healing? So again, you have two approaches. The Rambam clearly says, what does healing mean? Means it makes sense. It works. Anything that works, works. And therefore, you don't have to be worried about Darchei Emori. It's logical. It makes sense. You can prove it. You can repeat it. It's empirical. Don't worry. I have a pain in my stomach. I take a tablet. And all of a sudden, my stomach feels better. It's a nace, a nace. No, it's not a nace. Because the doctors, I don't know what happens when I take Akamol, but the doctors know, and they can show me if I were to put enough time and effort into understanding. It makes sense. That's what he said is not Darchei Emori. But anything that is not medically provable making sense, that's Darchei Emori. The Rashbam takes him to task. And he, look, if you're interested in this later, on page 8, number 40, the Rambam's in 37, and also there's a Gemara that says anyone who's bitten by a rabid dog, you should feed the dog the liver of, you should feed the person rather, the liver of the rabid dog, and that will be a cure for the rabies. The Rambam just says total rubbish. He says that's called a segula, and a segula is not acceptable. We don't give people trade food, the liver of a dog, based on segulas. And the Rashba comes along, and the Rashba says, excuse me, are you telling me that only things that appear in Galen and Aristotle are acceptable medicine? Are you telling me that everything is now based on Harvey and Grey's Anatomy? I mean the book rather than the television program. And if it's not there, then it's not real. Says the Rashba, there are some things that the doctors don't quite understand, but they seem to work. Don't dis non-conventional medicine. Don't give disrespectful approaches to non-conventional medicine, says the Rashba. Very interesting discussion here. And he says there are some things that nobody knows how they work, and the example he gives is a compass. Says nobody knows why a compass always points north. Nobody understands electromagnetism. He doesn't use the electro or the magnetism word. But this is something that works, but no one understands why. So don't tell me that only conventional understandings of medicine are true. And therefore you have a little bit of a disagreement there. Let me just finish with two things. First of all, my find of the week in on page 9, on number 42, was vegetarian kaporas. Rashi brings a minag of kaporas, where he says the minag was to take a seedling, to plant a seedling and grow it for a couple of weeks before Rosh Hashanah, and then put it round the head of the child and say the wording of kaporas, zetachadzeh, etc., and then throw it in the river. Interesting. You have kaporas and tashlik and everything all rolled into one. So if you find the chicken angle problematic, then you can always go down the vegetarian angle. And I just want to show you on the very last page, on page 10. And again, I've hurried this a little bit, but hopefully it will give you something to read later. Tosfos already says that minhag spelled backwards is gehenim. There are some minhagim, he says, that need to be confined to the scrap heap of history. Rav Hirsch says that like all things which may have been holy, like korbanos, over time they go off and some of them become apostel over time, and therefore you should be checking them to see that they still apply in this day and age. And I couldn't resist bringing Rav Aviner, who writes about segulas, and he says the segula for shalom bayis is the husband should help his wife. Okay, the segula for children's education is a good education. The segula for learning Torah is learning consistently without interruption. The segula for debts is spend less than you earn and don't rely on the miracle of overcoming the rules of mathematics. The segula for a long life is not to speak lashon hara. And the segula against traffic accidents is driving carefully and giving chesed to those who need rides. At the end of the day, these schoolers are tried and tested. They're based on Torah and mitzvahs. But there are other schoolers which are out there, and I'm not here to tell you which ones work, which ones don't. You can ask your local Orthodox rabbi or your local Kabbalist if you're so inclined. But hopefully that gives us a little bit of background. I wish everybody a Gemach Tzima Tova. You should all have a good Geben Shiah. We will meet again 3 weeks from today, please God. Not next week, not the week after, but 3 weeks from today for something else.
Sir, can you tell me about Kaporas?